Hush, little baby, a story I will tell you of a love that has vanquished the powers of hell. Alleluia, the great storm is over. Lift up your wings and
I think the punchline must be we're dead or something. And that's true, but...
Maybe you could comment on the Museveni Kagame invasion of Rwanda in 1990, restoring minority rule. And also, August 13th, New York Times 64 said that if a single African nation raised the plight of blacks in America, we'd be, the United States would be in trouble.
Malcolm X had gained access to Africa's most revolutionary leaders on a politically explosive issue. On August 13th, the New York Times correspondent reported from Washington on the State and Justice Department's, quote, interest in Malcolm X's campaign to convince African states to raise the question of persecution of American Negroes at the United Nations. According to the Times article, Washington officials said, that if Malcolm succeeded in convincing just one African government to bring up the charge at the United Nations, the United States government would be faced with a touchy problem. Now, since there were two such African states that had been decolonized that were majority ruled, notably Rwanda and Libya, of course Rwanda is back to the ethnic rule that predominates the world, but those two, in 94, Mr. Bill, of course, well, no, excuse me, 1990, it was Bobby Bush, for whom he was the attendant at the Plano, Arkansas Coke stand as governor for Bobby Bush's guns for drugs stand, Coke stand at the Opium War. So 1990, and Mr. Bill finishes it up with the 1994 genocide, but it's really the 1990 invasion of Rwanda from Uganda by Kagame, who's trained at SOA, okay? That was when Rwanda reverted to minority rule. And of course, his successor, Drone Bomber, the foreman of this Dixiecratic plantation, is responsible for Libya. So now there are no African countries capable of raising the issue of the plight of the descendants of the former slaves and survivors of the American genocide.
Yeah, on the subject of Libya, on Monday, May 18th, the conservative government watchdog group Judicial Watch published a selection of formerly classified documents obtained from the U.S. Department of Defense and State Department through federal lawsuit. While initial mainstream media reporting is focused on the White House handling of the Benghazi consulate attack, a much bigger picture, admission and confirmation is contained in one of the Defense Intelligence Agency documents circulated in 2012 that an Islamic State is desired in eastern Syria to affect the West's policy in the region. Accordingly, the new declassified report states that for, quote, the West, Gulf countries, and Turkey, which support the Syrian opposition, there is the possibility of establishing a declared or undeclared Salafist principality in eastern Syria, Hasaka and Derzor. And this is exactly what the supporting powers of the opposition want in order to isolate the Syrian regime. Kind of the contour, the endless contour that is the subject of the endless bad news horror story. Today and almost all Tuesdays, let's ask Webster about this.
Turkey, this entire thing, Turkey, ISIS, Syria, diplomatically, in terms of scandals, intelligence fakery by Allen and company, and at least a growing awareness, right? We see this reflected better late than never from Philip Giraldi, how Turkey plays the war on terror from the start, writes Giraldi. The old CIA. Turkey, which nominally opposes radical rebel groups like ISIS and Nusra, has been curiously absent from the fray, instead arguing that the major effort should be focusing on defeating al-Assad. Not quite accurate. Erdogan is the head of ISIS, and the supplies all go through Turkey. So without that help, they'd be nowhere. But he does say, indeed, I, Giraldi, when I was in Istanbul last July, bearded rebels, terrorists, were observed in the more fundamentalist neighborhoods collecting money for ISIS without any interference from the numerous and highly visible Turkish police and intelligence agencies. Turkey has also been surreptitiously buying as much as $3 million worth of smuggled oil from ISIS every day, virtually funding the group's activities. Of course, it's the son of Erdogan who does that stuff. Ankara has allowed ISIS militants to freely cross over.
And I'm going to refer to this as the third oil war. Now, the second oil war was shoehorned into the war on terror BS. So the third one is the same. You know, this the endless contra war are sending Arabs to Afghanistan to dissolve the USSR. And then there was the first oil war. As soon as the endless Contra war killed the USSR, we go for the oil fields of Iraq, where we had stationed our puppet, always a good target. Remember,
We armed Noriega, we armed Saddam, and we armed Osama. But, I'm losing track, but not a problem.
The Syrian border, for what we described as R&R, rest and relaxation, Vietnam era language, as well as medical care and training. And then Washington was delighted, and we were delighted here too at the beginning, when Turkey on July 23rd said that they would start attacking ISIS. But of course, that's not what it has turned out to be. This is now 300 or 400 in terms of who they're targeting. So,
Oh, never say on the mouse report, because then I jump in.
As to why the State Department would say they were revoking Malcolm.
Don't tell me you left a bunch of
citizenship to have them assassinated. So Rwanda specifically has been restored to minority rule. Could you comment on that? 1990 invasion with SOA trained or Fort Benning trained Paul Kagame.
Okay, that's sort of off topic. I don't know if you feel like saying anything about that.
That's a bit off the beaten track, and so to read that complicated question is, I don't think we have enough time because all the various strands. But certainly, I think the caller's second point with regard to U.S. sensitivity to what Africa thinks about how Black Americans are being maltreated is a relevant question, not least because, as I suggested earlier, I think the Cubans might have something to say about that as well.
All right.
Su huella en el viento, el águila Guadalcanal was one of our comrades. First of all, you have to understand the situation that we were in. And during those periods of times, the California prison system was very racist. In particular, there was a situation where sometimes we would hear people calling us niggas all night long. And we blame the guards for that, because we blame prison officials for that, because those conditions were something they could have did something about. But they allowed it and promoted it, you know.
Killer, but don't push me. Revenge is like the sweetest joy next to getting pussy.
Counterpunch against this, prevent him. He is going to bomb not ISIS, as they had promised, but the Kurds. In other words, the main force that the U.S. is relying on, and indeed the front line of civilization in general. The Kurds are the front line of human civilization against the ISIS butchers, rapists, mass killers, genocidalists, lunatics, and all the rest. So the Turkish officer comes into the Combined Air and Space Operations Center in a secret location. I mean, they know where it is, but we, for us, it's secret. The strike will begin in 10 minutes. So he says, all Allied jets, U.S., British, French, doesn't matter, go to the south of Mosul immediately or you could be in big trouble. And the officer telling this story, a military source with knowledge of the Turkish attack, says, quote, we were outraged. And America, you better be outraged too. This is horrendous. This is out of the question. So they're telling the U.S. Naval and Air Force pilots to skedaddle, and it's not only them. Even more serious, perhaps, the U.S. Special Forces are training the Kurds, doing something good for a change, right? Gold is where you find it. Don't close your mind. Remember, this is the front line against civilization. So if the U.S. can help the Kurds, great, do it. So at the time that these bombs begin to fall, right, the Turks are starting to bomb the PKK Kurds. At least officially, the U.S. doesn't have anybody there. But the YPG Kurds in Syria, the U.S. has large commitments of advisors, helpers, and it should be more. It should. These are the people you want to help militarily, arm them, right, because they're fighting your battle. So the quote here is, we had no idea who the Turkish fighters were, airplanes now, their call signs, what frequencies they were using, their altitude, or what they were squawking to identify the jets on radar. Now, the thesis of the article is that we're headed towards a wider war, thanks to Alan. So, fire Alan for ISIS.
You work in the federal building in Brooklyn. Who do you work for?
I work for a local 638. I'm a steam fitter. We are currently doing a project in Brooklyn. It's a post office. It is several federal buildings in Brooklyn. We are doing a renovation job there. But it's a federal building. Being as such, as soon as we were aware that there were, as soon as the word went out that it was a possible terrorist attack, that this wasn't, and we knew after the second aircraft, we knew that it wasn't an accident, because we know, you know, it's restricted airspace.
Guards on each side of us.
200 years ago, we fought a revolution in the name of certain beliefs, of liberty, of justice for all, of self-rule and self-reliance. There are many in this country who feel we have not yet won that war. Terrorist acts, violent political theater, these have been a part of social dissent in this country since its inception. But why? Why here in this land of freedom? What's led men to such bloodshed in the name of their beliefs? Why in this era of national prosperity has the anti-government movement been at its peak? And what's that going to mean when the prosperity fades? Fewer and fewer of us are voting. More and more of us are joining the ranks of a resistance. How long are we going to continue to call these numbers insignificant? What do they have to teach us?
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine. the bête noire of the alternative news circuit.
You're too stupid to know what that word means.
Whoa, what the fuck, Amy? Where's this hostility coming from?
Dumbass. When I talk, people listen.
Yeah, no fucking shit. You're on NPR.
Keep talking and I will sue your ass for slander.
But I thought you were a fan of the show. She always seems so nice. Anyway, I am your host, Stimulator, and as the teeming pile of pissed off messages in my inbox can attest, me and my crew of Submedia Slaves recently took a month and a half long hiatus from the guerrilla task of producing bi-weekly riot porn mashups to pay a brief visit to our comrades at the Onestone camp, followed by some well-needed R&R. But while sipping mojitos in the balmy summertime sun has been a welcome change to the seemingly endless frozen fucking hellscape of winter here in Canada, in many other parts of the world, this summer has been a biblical clusterfuck of droughts, natural disasters, and record-breaking heat waves that have climate experts admitting that shit's even more fucked than they previously thought.
Only collapse of civilization prevents runaway climate change. Well, as it turns out, now we know that collapse of industrial civilization leads to abrupt climate change as well. So it's a...
On July 20th, world-renowned climatologist James Hansen co-authored a report on a newly discovered feedback loop off the coast of Antarctica, which concluded that sea levels could rise 10 fucking times faster than previously expected, up to 10 feet by 2065. For instance, for the worst drought in over 1,000 fucking years, as the economically depressed U.S. colony has been hit with a mega drought. Water levels are so low that the government has been instituting water rationing on almost the entire population. Bombing in Zurich, which targeted an international brigade of communist and anarchist youth that were preparing to cross into Rojava to bring toys to the region's war-plagued children and aid in the reconstruction of Kobani, while this disgusting and cowardly act was ultimately claimed by the fascist fucking zealots of the so-called Islamic State, or ISIS.
If you want the killing to stop, you give us $10 million, change your name to Muhammad, and kill Justin Bieber.
Kurdish militants were quick to point much of the blame at Turkey's shit-eating president Tayyip Erdogan, who had long been backing up ISIS in their fight against the Syrian Kurdish defense forces of the YPG and the YPJ. The night of the bombing, protests erupted in major cities across Turkey, with minor clashes taking place across several neighborhoods in Istanbul. Despite an intense government clampdown on social media, these clashes intensified over the next 24 hours, and by nightfall on July 21st, armed demonstrations and Molotov attacks were taking place in Istanbul and cities across the country's Kurdish southeast. The next day, things ramped up further with the execution of two Turkish police officers who Kurdish militants claim have been complicit in the Zurich bombing. Responding to this growing unrest on July 23rd, Erdogan formally announced the launching of Turkey's very own war on terror. But it quickly became apparent that the main target of this war wasn't going to be ISIS, but members of the Kurdistan's Workers' Party.
Oops, yeah, so just like they telescope the, I guess the second oil war is like the Contra war. It's like Saddam was a commie, so that, but they telescope these contradictory things, like the third, this is, they're fixing to like go to war bombing ISIS in Iraq and Syria. That will be the third oil war. And it's just like the, the second oil war, yeah, going against our, the second oil war is telescoped on this war on terror BS, which is a 180 in the Contra war. So you see, you're just like doing these little donuts down, spinning down, I've done that, spun down the freeway, doing donuts, spinning down the freeway. somebody else was at the wheel, but that's kind of the way it is.
Le puso cerco a la muerte.
Aquí se queda la clara, la entrañable transparencia de
tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara.
potencia comandar el Che Guevara.
Of the guy routing in the Dark Alliance. This is when, you know, the guns for drugs, the Contra War, just like is going on now with the opium, these Tech Fury, drug fuel. Now, UBS, oh yeah, and Obama's bloody hands, because Lanny Brewer is who Holder comes from. I mean, Covington and Burling, they're the law firm representing Union Bank of Switzerland, who had the 19,000. These are funding the ISIS, the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. The Salamis Principality, the 2012 DIA report endorses and says, this is our 2007 redirection, okay? Now, during the second Jim Crow coup, Traitor Kerry administering the rape and pillage of your and my asses, 2007 redirection is actually the Salvador option articulated by the military, articulated by Wesley Clark, actually, right after blowing ourselves up. The Pentagon said, okay, now we have to destroy Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Syria, Lebanon, all those countries we know from the wars we've been attacking. Contra war, so it was kind of a dark alliance sort of thing. And then all of a sudden, oh, we protest too much by bombing our Contras like we did in Afghanistan after backing them to kill the USSR. But where were we?
It is 10...
But this has been reported in the British press. He's mad at the Israelis because he wants them to reach an accommodation with the people in Gaza, with Hamas. Because in the back of his mind, he's been saying that, hey, if we don't do this, we may have ISIS in place of Hamas in Gaza. That could happen. In other words, you may have a worsening of this resistance that may take on this the terrible trappings of this horrible movement that's called ISIS. What we have to remember here, of course, is that Hamas was never against the U.S. It never undertook any activity against the United States. Let's remember that. People should mention that. Hamas is very focused on their struggle against Israel. And when we're seeing all this war between ISIS, which to my mind is a CIA creation, by the way, when we see this war between ISIS and between Americans and Christians, you never see that on the part of the Palestinians.
Why do you think ISIS is a CIA creation?
Of course. Who else paid money for it? Who else nurtured it? Why did Erdogan open his borders to them? Why did the Chechens and people from Bosnia and people from Eastern Europe come in and join the Iraqis and the Syrian militants? Who did that? Who financed them? Saudi Arabia financed them with the okay of the CIA. It is a CIA creation. The same way in which the Islamics who fought the Soviet Union in Afghanistan in 1979, and eventually we ended up with the Taliban, which is an accelerated Islamization and a more extreme Islamization of the resistance in Afghanistan.
So let's jump to the SOTT.net article. It's official, U.S. used Al-Qaeda to destroy Libya. And it says, U.S. supported opposition which overthrew Libya's Gaddafi was largely comprised of Al-Qaeda terrorists. According to a 2007 report by West Point's Combating Terrorism Center, the Libyan city of Benghazi was one of Al-Qaeda's main headquarters and bases for sending Al-Qaeda fighters into Iraq prior to the overthrow of Gaddafi. The Hindustan Times reported last year, there is no question that Al-Qaeda Libyan franchise, Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, is part of the opposition. Bruce Rydell, former CIA officer and a leading expert on terrorism, told Hindustan Times, it has always been Gaddafi's biggest enemy, and his stronghold is Benghazi. Al-Qaeda is now largely in control of Libya. Indeed, Al-Qaeda flags were flown over Benghazi courthouse once Gaddafi was toppled. Incidentally, Gaddafi was on the verge of invading Benghazi in 2011, 4 years after the West Point report cited Benghazi as a hotbed of Al-Qaeda terrorists. Gaddafi claimed, rightly it turns out, that Benghazi was an Al-Qaeda stronghold and a main source of the Libyan rebellion, but Libyan planes stopped him and protected Benghazi. Libyan Mail reported yesterday, a self-selected group of former top military officials, CIA insiders, and think tankers declared Tuesday in Washington that a seven-month review of the deadly 2012 terrorist attack has determined that it could have been prevented if the U.S. hadn't been helping to arm Al-Qaeda militias throughout Libya a year earlier. The United States switched sides in the war on terror with what we did in Libya, knowingly facilitating the provision of weapons to known Al-Qaeda militias and figures, Claire Lopez, a member of the commission and a former CIA officer, told Mail Online. She blamed the Obama administration for failing to stop half of a 1 billion United Arab Emirates arms shipments from reaching the Al-Qaeda-linked militants. Remember, these weapons that came into Benghazi were permitted to enter by our armed forces who were blockading the approaches from air and sea, Lopez claimed. They were permitted to come in. They knew these weapons were coming in, and that was allowed. The intelligence community was part of that. The Department of State was part of that. And certainly that means that the top leadership of the United States, our national security leadership, and potentially Congress, if they were briefed on this, also knew about this, unquote. The White House and senior congressional members, the group wrote an interim report released Tuesday, deliberately and knowingly pursued a policy that provided material support to terrorist organizations in order to topple a ruler, Muammar Gaddafi, who had been working closely with the West actively to suppress Al-Qaeda, unquote. Some look at that as treason, unquote, said Wayne Simons, a former CIA officer who participated in the commission's research. The same thing is happening in Syria. The U.S. switched sides into supporting our archenemy, Al-Qaeda. Specifically, the Benghazi embassy became the CIA headquarters for transferring, after Gaddafi fell, weapons in Libya to the Syrian Al-Qaeda rebels, as confirmed by Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Seymour Hersh.
comment. In 1951, Libya was the poorest nation in the world. By 2010, guided by Gaddafi's vision for a strong and unified continent, it had become the jewel of Africa. The people received free education, with every citizen owning their own home and vehicle. Basic rights were for the most part universally honored. It was, by any standards, one of the most successful social experiments the modern world has seen. It still puts the West to shame. Its ongoing barbaric destruction is one more heinous crime against humanity committed by NATO. That's www.sott.net/article/300721. It's official, the U.S. used Al-Qaeda to destroy Libya.
It's a series of articles actually written together over several years.
And this gets into my reading of Malcolm and Martin. of the state. Washington officials were warning Malcolm publicly to back off. The unmentioned agency responsible for dealing with such a touchy problem was the CIA. After consulting with LBJ and FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, the State Department told CIA's Director of Covert Action in a memorandum that, quote, Malcolm has, for all practical purposes, renounced his U.S. citizenship, unquote. Malcolm had never renounced his citizenship, but the State Department was now telling the CIA's Director of Covert Action to deal with him as if he were a foreign adversary. After 18 weeks spent meeting with African leaders, Malcolm X flew back to New York at the end of November 1964. He was soon confronted by an issue of the Nation of Islam newspaper, Muhammad Speaks, featuring an attack on him by Minister Louis X, known later as Louis Farrakhan. Louis X wrote, "The die is set and Malcolm shall not escape, especially after such evil, foolish talk about his benefactor. Such a man as Malcolm is worthy of death," unquote. Louis Farrakhan has in recent years acknowledged publicly that his words were like fuel on a fire and helped create the atmosphere that moved others to kill Malcolm. On December 1st, 64, Malcolm's close friend, Alex Kazon Saki of Ghana, was elected president of the UN General Assembly. Q-U-A-I-S-O-N-S-A-C-K-E-Y. Kazon Saki arranged for Malcolm to have his own office at the UN to organize his human rights campaign. Malcolm was not about to back off from his UN confrontation with the United States on human rights. In February 1965, Malcolm X's office once again almost connected with Martin Luther King. The place was Selma, Alabama, during a turbulent civil rights campaign. The date was February 4th, only 17 days before Malcolm's death. When Malcolm arrived in Selma after speaking at nearby Tuskegee Institute the night before King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference, staff was panicked. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, activists present wanted Malcolm X to speak to the crowd at Brown Chapel. With Dr. King in jail, his SCLC staff called on Coretta Scott King to speak after Malcolm to put out his fire. Mrs. King was instead inspired by Malcolm to see the hope of a transforming convergence between him and her husband. Malcolm told the crowd of activists that because civil rights were human rights, the U.S. government, by failing to uphold their rights, was in violation of the U.N. Charter. Coretta was then impressed by the gentle way in which Malcolm said to her afterwards, "Mrs. King, will you tell Dr. King that I had planned to visit him in jail? I won't get a chance now because I've got to martyrdom, page 6. I've got to leave to get to New York in time to catch a plane for London." Malcolm barred from France. Nonviolence or non-existence. J. Edgar Hoover smears King. Malcolm's home. Firebombed. Okay. At 2:45 a.m. on March 14, 1965, the Queen's home in which Malcolm X and his family were sleeping was firebombed. Malcolm, Betty Shabazz, who was 6 months pregnant with twins, and their, page 7, four daughters barely escaped. 2 days after the firebombing, police detectives told the media that a whiskey bottle containing gasoline had been found intact and upright on top of a baby dresser in the house, implying that Malcolm had left it there. Both the police and a Nation of Islam spokesman suggested Malcolm burn down his house for the sake of publicity. The police did not mention that it was Betty Shabazz who, on returning to the gutted house to salvage belongings, had found the bottle on her baby's dresser. She had pointed it out to firefighters. How had it gotten there? Malcolm X had been saying, "My house was bombed by the black Muslim movement upon the orders of Elijah Muhammad." When Shabazz discovered the bottle of gasoline on the dresser and the police raised it publicly, she and Malcolm knew, as Shabazz said later, "Only someone in the uniform of a fireman or a policeman could have planted the bottle of gasoline on my baby's dresser." The police had tried to scapegoat them. Malcolm and Betty suspected they were being set up for something worse. In the meantime, a dry run of Malcolm's assassination had already been carried out in the Audubon Ballroom, It was witnessed by New York police infiltrator Gene Roberts, who had become Malcolm's security guard. By this time, Roberts had also become Malcolm's friend and admirer. He was taking his role as Malcolm's bodyguard more seriously than his mentors wanted. When Malcolm X spoke at the Audubon Ballroom on Monday, February 15th, Roberts saw a preview of what would happen the following Sunday, a fake disruption in the audience designed to draw everyone's attention, then a movement elsewhere towards Malcolm, which on Sunday would include three shooters firing simultaneously. Roberts said he called his New York police supervisor when the meeting was over. He said, "Listen, I just saw the driver on Malcolm's life. I feel it's going to go down next Sunday." He said, "Okay, we'll pass it on."
changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill a hero. Get it back to the kids, who the hell cares? One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship them, don't let them deal with brothers. Give them guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids, but then it changed. That's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Hear me.
Oh, come on. Oh, come on. That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same.
That's just the way it is. Oh yeah. I see no changes. All I see is racist faces. Misplaced hate makes disgrace to racist. We under. I wonder what it takes to make this one better place. Let's erase the wasted. Take the evil out the people, they'll be acting right. Cause both black and white and smoke a crack tonight. And the only time we chill is when we kill each other. It takes guilt to be real time to heal each other. And although it seems evident, we ain't ready to see a black president. It ain't a secret, don't conceal the fact. The penitentiary's packed and it's filled with blacks. But some things will never change. Try to show another way, but you're staying in the dope game. Now tell me what's a mother to do. Being real don't appeal to the brother in you. You gotta operate the easy way.
I made a G today,
but you made it in a sleazy way. Sell it back to the kids.
I gotta get paid.
Well, hey, well, that's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Hear me.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on. Come on.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same.
Never be the same, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
We gotta make a change. It's time for us as a people to start making some changes. Let's change the way we eat. Let's change the way we live. And let's change the way we treat each other. You see, the old way wasn't working, so it's on us to do what we gotta do to survive. And still I see no changes. Can a brother get a little peace? It's war on the streets and a war in the Middle East. Instead of war on poverty, they got a war on drugs so the police can bother me. And I ain't never did a crime, I ain't have to do. But now I'm back with the locks, giving it back to you. Don't let them jack you up, back you up, crack you up, and pips back you up. You gotta learn to hold your own. They get jealous when they see you with your mobile phone. But tell the cops I can't touch this. I don't trust this. When they try to rush, I bust this. That's the sound number two. You say it ain't cool. But it raised no fool. And as long as I stay black, I gotta stay strapped. And I never get to lay back, cause I always gotta worry about the payback. Some buck that I roughed up way back, coming back after all these years. Rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat. That's the way it is.
That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah. That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh yeah.
Something will never change.
You help Spring Geronimo when DJ Mouse asks, when the cops let the killers go, the question isn't violence, it rap, it's what did Tupac do to earn our nation's highest commendation? And I think Keela gave it to Ja Rule, who said, help work to get Geronimo G. Jog out after his COINTELPRO frame up.